Hey, it's episode 410 of the 343 podcast. It is the first episode of the new year. We wrapped up a fabulous 2025. We're looking forward to an even better 2026. And Benny surprised me as he usually does every single week when we record, but this time he surprised me with a variety show. He solicited our Instagram followers for questions or topics that they wanted addressed. And so he picked over a handful of those suckers. There's a little bit for everybody in this episode. There's, I don't know, rants about soccer culture. There's rants about why is it that the United States has 350 million people and we still can't produce one single world-class player in our 100-year soccer history. It starts with that one, and then it gets better and better and better. Of course, there's going to be ranting about U.S. soccer, MLS. Of course, you know that's coming. You know there's going to be promotion relegation talk in this one as well. But I'm telling you, whether you're a coach, you're a parent, you're a media person, you're a fan, you name it, this is the place to be. Let's start off 2026 in the right way. Speaking of building something, if you're a coach, you need to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium programs for you there, and you can work towards building something remarkable here in the United States. We've done it, guys. We've done it for over two decades, dominated the youth soccer scene, and ever since we moved on to working in the professional level, we've codified all our lessons learned. We've codified the methodology that took Brian Kleiben's youth teams to the national scene, to the top of the mountain. You don't need to have the best of the best to actually do remarkable work. It's actually easier, more amenable to the methodology if you have a low-level team and even a young team. Whatever age group, boys, girls, it doesn't matter. The lower the level you actually are operating at, the easier it is to implement the methodology. You know, here's some reasoning why in this episode. So again, I repeat, coaches, start the new year right. Go to 343coaching.com and sign up right away. And parents, you are coaches off the field. You also need to be able to guide and mentor your kids for them to be able to fulfill their potential. It's not an easy task, and I don't envy you. But just like what we've done for coaches, we've done for parents. We've codified our decades worth of experience from working from cradle to grave, from 9 years of age up to and including, late 20-somethings who are in the professional environment. We've seen countless cycles. We know what works, we know what the pitfalls are, and we try to help you avoid them. How do you avoid them? You go to 343masterclass.com. Parents, go to 343masterclass.com, and you too should start on the right foot in 2026. Last but certainly not least, if you're coaching in the 7-versus-7 environment, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this one with Alec Lemon. Here we go. Hey, fire away, Benny. Let's get right to it.
Let's do it, bro. Well, I'm assuming this is going to be the last episode of 2025. I'd like to get it published before the new year, but I'd like to do kind of a variety show today, Gary. Talk about things that have happened this past year. I also opened it up to our followers. I don't know if you saw on Instagram. I made like a little poll for people to come in and comment what they want us to talk about and what they want to hear. So we can go through those, and then I'll bring up some other topics that have been kind of buzzing on X recently. I know you've been pretty active in the last couple of days, getting a lot of traction too. So.
Okay. And so some of them I should do quick fire, right? I shouldn't go on a 20-30 minute rant for each one of those things, right? I'll get right to the point. What do you think?
No, dude, I think let's break them down, because some of them you're going to hear, you're going to be like, fuck, this could be a whole episode burst.
Okay. Well, okay. All right. We'll see how it goes. We'll just wing it. We shouldn't be here 5 hours. You know what I mean?
No, we won't. Maybe we'll limit it to 10 minutes max. If I see you going over 10 minutes, I'm going to hit a buzzer and fucking on to the next one. Yeah. All right, bro. Let's start with the legend, your homie, Facundo Bruno. I think this guy put the best question. Here it is, Gary. 347 million people in the U.S., 45 million in Argentina. Why can't the U.S. produce just one crack?
Yeah, it's a good question. The population question has been coming up for years here in the United States. Even Americans talk about it. Americans who are asking the same sort of question. We have such a huge population. Look at Uruguay with 3.5 or 4 million people. And Uruguay is top of the pile, basically. in player production. So let me start with the classic responses that the NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL bros always give, or the MLS homers always give. Oh, well, it's not the most popular sport in the U.S. You know, it's competing with the other sports. Like the biggest proportion of those 350 million guys, they go to the other sports. They don't go to soccer. Me. Well, the easy way to rebut that, Ben, is, I mean, there's a whole bunch of ways, but one statistic that people may not be that familiar with is that soccer is the most popularly played sport in the United States. It has the most number of registered players in the United States. It's huge, and it's on the order of tens of millions already. So last I looked at this statistic was maybe like 5 to 7 years ago, and it was on the order of 22 to 25 million registered players in the United States alone. So let's just run with that number, even though I think it's grown considerably. That in and of itself is, I don't know, about seven times the entire population of Uruguay and half the population of Argentina, which is what Facundo just said in that question. So you're telling me that with 20 to 30 million kids going into soccer, there isn't one single possible crack. There's something else afoot. We have the numbers, Benny. We have the numbers. So clearly it's not that. Clearly it's not the popularity. And in my opinion, everybody goes through this learning curve, and you have to go through the journey to come out the other side and kind of recognize what the issue is. And the learning curve looks like this. Oh, well, pay to play. You know, it filters out a lot of players. There's truth to that, but that's not really the reason why there's no cracks. Oh, well, Gary, coaches aren't very good here in the United States. Also a true story, you know, but that's not really the reason behind that. Oh, Gary, you know, the path to pro was always college, you know, and we just now started with these academies. Okay, there's a lot of truth to that too, but it's not the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem, Benny, and you already know where this is going, is that it is not an open ecosystem. It is not promotion relegation, which literally means an open ecosystem where different ideas can compete for supremacy. And so what are the different ideas? Well, Facundo's question was specifically about players developing one world-class player. Why can't one world-class player come out? It's because we've had a uniformity of ideas here, a homogenous, monolithic view of what is a good player. And nobody has been able to challenge that view. And the good player prototypically here, and still to this day, even though people will refute it, is they look at the physical attributes as being supreme, and then they look at the other things, right? It's like, is he big? Is he fast? Is he strong? And then, is he technically gifted? And then it's, does he tactically understand the game? And then it's the psychological component. And it's inverted, Ben. It should be the other way around. It should be, is the kid technically and tactically kind of there? Does he understand football? Does he have clean touches? Does he get it? Is it in him? And then you go downstairs from that. You can't neglect the physical. Obviously, it's very important, but we don't have a competition of ideas, Benny. And that's what an open ecosystem affords. And that's why we suck balls. And by the way, it doesn't mean that we can't be World Cup contenders going forward in this World Cup and in the forward, doing things wrong like we do. We can, Benny, because we have such a huge population. We still might become among the best in the world by doing everything wrong. We still might come out on top eventually.
Yeah, Gary, can you touch a little bit too on, like, is the culture of kids playing in the streets every day and having that as part of their entire life from the moment that they're born? Is that a big part of it too? Because it seems like you say it all the time, there are a lot of soccer first households in the U.S., but at the same time, we're not producing the same quality of players that you see in Argentina or in different countries in the world. You know, is that a big part of it too? The culture that exists of, hey, I'm going to go outside and play with my buddies every single day. I'm going to play 5v5, pickup soccer, street soccer. Is that a big part of it too? Because even if we had an open system, Gary, I mean, would we just magically start producing cracks like they do in Argentina in the next 10, 15 years?
So there's a lot there. Yes, it's part of it too. The kids playing out and pick up games and having what in Argentina we call Fútbol Cinco, you know, little Fútbol Cinco parks all over the place. That is huge. We do have a ton of soccer first households who do play pickup. Is it enough? No, it's not enough. But it still goes to what we've just finished discussing. If the system were open, Benny, then that means we have a competition of ideas. And then that means the incentives are all aligned to produce a crack or produce cracks, because there are dollar bills behind producing cracks, and there's prestige behind producing cracks, and there's cultural pride behind elevating a crack. And so with all of those things aligned, entrepreneurs, cities, communities themselves would build those little parks or allocate a little section of the park to doing that. Or clubs will go out of their way and instantiate all of those little community-based fields, okay? And instantiate a lot of pickup soccer in their regional area because they want to have an amazing farm to pluck kids from. But the incentive is not there to do that now, Benny.
Got it.
So from a cultural perspective, then the good, the strong soccer cultures also will naturally be elevated above the classic suburban, you know, two or three training sessions a week, you know, $10,000 a year, pay to play fee. Those guys wouldn't survive, right? It'd be the actual people who have it in the blood who would rise to the top, which they don't in the current system.
Yeah. But if you look at Mexico, Gary, why do you think they're not producing? Because for a long time, their system was open, right? I mean, until,
yes.
When did their system close? Like 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago? So they had
a while.
It's been longer than that. But even so, right? They had an open system. They obviously had the culture. They had kids playing every day. Why weren't they competing on the global stage? Is it the infrastructure? Is it just not good enough? I mean, bro, you would think that they would be producing at least 20 to 30 world-class players every year, but it's been kind of a downfall of Mexico in the last 15 years.
So you started off with the right diagnosis, and that is that, you know, they closed the promotion and relegation about 8 years ago. Somebody, we have to look this up. I don't have the exact numbers or figures in there. And a lot of very smart soccer people in Mexico, Mexicans themselves, said that this would trigger the beginning of the end of their competitiveness. And I myself, and people can go back and look up my tweets historically. And here's a quick little hint, since Grok is intimately tied, XAA is intimately tied with X.com. You can just go to Grok and say, hey, look up all the posts that at 343 made regarding Mexico having the worst cohort of players in the, do something, do a search. And then all my tweets will pop up, all my X posts will pop up regarding this topic. And I predicted it as well, that it would trigger the worst generation of Mexican national teams ever. So that is what's caused the major downfall. Now, if we go even further back into history, Benny, to your question, They were pretty competitive in global football. They were respected in global football. When, you know, Germany has to play them, or Argentina has to play them, or Brazil has to play them. Look, the favorites are clear. It's Argentina, Germany, Brazil. But you respected Mexico. You had to be careful with them. And they did have players who did very well. Chicharito did very well. That guy played at Manchester United, played at Real Madrid, played in the Premier League for God knows how long, played in La Liga for God knows how long. You had Hugo Sanchez, who was at Real Madrid, one of the biggest goal scorers ever in the history of Real Madrid. That was back in the day. How did those guys pop up? You know, they have the culture. Now, with respect to winning a World Cup or being in semifinals and stuff, that's hard, even if you're doing everything right. Because so many other countries are also doing everything right. Argentina's doing things right. Brazil's doing things right. Germany, Holland, Portugal, Belgium. You go down the whole list. Now you have 20 countries with hardcore soccer cultures doing things right, meaning there's promotion, relegation, and open ecosystem. It's hard for Mexico to just say, oh, we're doing things right too. Let's win the World Cup.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I just looked it up. It was, I don't know if this is accurate because it came from AI and Google, but they said 2020, that Mexico ended promotion relegation because of the financial burden of COVID. But I also saw that they said because of a court ruling, it's supposed to come back in 2026, 2027. So we'll see if that happens.
Okay.
And maybe we'll see.
A lot of the soccer brilliance in Mexico has been saying we need to have that. Otherwise, because our league is shit. The league has gone to shit. Liga MX and the clubs there have gone to shit, Benny. It's not competitive anymore.
Yeah. Do you think the owners of clubs in Mexico kind of looked at the U.S. and said, like, oh, shit, look at these franchise owners in MLS are able to stay in power, keep their money. Maybe let's convince our government to do the same thing. We're corruption.
Of course. Who doesn't want a monopoly, Benny? That's why. And you saw some of my tweets. You might be bringing them up in later in our conversation. I don't blame MLS. I rail against MLS, obviously, but I actually don't blame them for the way that they comport themselves. They have a monopoly. They want to keep their monopoly. They want to expand their monopoly. If I was a business owner, I want a monopoly too, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I have Don Garber's comments in your tweet, so we'll get into that
at
the end of the episode. All right, we hit the 10-minute mark on that one. So, Facundo, you're a legend. Thank you, bro.
Jesus.
All right. Can we talk about the ridiculousness of the suburban soccer parent, Gary?
Yeah. Okay.
Your size says it all.
No, well, like how you said at the beginning of our chat that I'm going to be feeling like these are multiple episode topics, Benny. Let's see if we can keep this one brief. First off, I don't know what they mean by that. I'm going to presume I know what they mean by that. I know you have the image of the ridiculous suburban soccer parent too, Benny. I'm going to roll with that one. What was the question? Can we stop it? What was the question?
Can we talk about it?
talk about it. Jeez. Look, I put myself in their shoes. They pay a lot of money to be involved in soccer in this country. I'm presuming club soccer. When you pay a lot of money as a customer, you expect something in return that is going to satisfy you at the very minimum, if not make you happy for your purchase. And with that comes, you know, a lot of babysitting from the coaching and club side, you know, and a lot of education and in many cases, a lot of bullshitting. Because I know coaches out there, you know, they become a handful. You know, you're constantly getting text messages from them or emails from them or questions from them after training, before training, after games, before games, when little Johnny isn't getting his playing time. Because ultimately, it all comes down to playing time. 90% of the time, it comes down to, is my kid getting playing time? And the other 10% is littered for other things. Maybe the kid is getting playing time, but he's not being played as the striker. My kid is a goal scorer. Why are you putting him as right back, you know, or as right mid or something like this? So, guys, it's just the nature of the beast. You have to learn how to live with it. You have to learn how to manage it. Coaches here in the States become very good managers. They become very good politicians because you have to, or otherwise you don't survive. And yeah, I don't know what else to say, Benny. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Help me out.
Yeah. My biggest thing, Gary, it just comes down to they don't know any better, bro. I mean, like you said, put yourself in their shoes. They probably never played soccer in their entire life. And of course, they're going to get excited on the sideline when their son or daughter is playing for the first time. And they're going to get bought into the team and they want to see their kids lift the trophy. And I think it's just a matter of they don't know any better. And if people want to, like this guy, let's talk about the ridiculousness of it. If you want to end that, then you have to help educate them, you know? I was, just to give an example of a ridiculous suburban parent, I was in a tournament a couple of weeks ago. And obviously, you know, I think I've said this before, so I don't care. So I coach at AC Brea, okay, a small local club here in the community. And we were warming up for our game, like behind the goal, because it's a complex, but there's really no space to warm up. Okay. And another AC Brea was playing right before us, you know? And so my kids, being like the little knuckleheads that they are, they just start chanting like, let's go Brea, you know? And every single one of the parents on the other sideline is like screaming at the ref, like, refs, like, they can't chant. They can't chant. And I'm like, what are we talking about, bro? And one of the parents like comes up close to us, bro. He's like, what's wrong with you guys? I hope you guys lose today. And I'm just like, Jesus, bro. Like, how are you getting triggered right now by 10-year-old kids, bro? And so after the game, like, I'm walking over to their sideline to get set up. And the dad is literally telling the kid, like, oh, like that coach is a piece of shit, you know? I'm like, wow, bro, this is an example that you're setting for your kid. He's like, yeah, this is what I'm teaching him. And I'm just like, all right, bro. Like, but again, it comes down to they don't know any better, bro. They don't know the culture of football around the world. They don't know the competitiveness, I guess, or the dark arts that we always like to talk about. And yeah, dude, I mean, you can't blame them, dude, because they don't know any better, bro. Like, think about who they have to look up to. They watch MLS games. They look at ESPN commentary or the announcers that they hear. They don't know any better, bro. You know? And so they're probably looking to maybe another parent on the team that has a kid that's played club before. Like, they're trying to role model themselves off of them, I guess. So I don't know, bro. I mean, I think that was a good example of the suburban parent. But again, dude, it's just, we got to educate, bro. Got to keep educating everybody, and we'll see if it ever changes, bro. I don't know.
It's the perfect example, Benny. I'm glad you said it. The no chanting thing, it's such a classic case of the suburban parent.
Right. And keep in mind,
because we complain about there's no culture and the kids are exhibiting soccer culture and the suburban is trying to stamp it down.
Yeah. And let me say one more thing. Keep in mind, Gary, this game is the last game of the tournament for them. They were already eliminated and they were already losing 3-0 at that point. So the game doesn't mean anything. It's not like they're playing in a semifinal or a final. The game meant nothing, bro. And they got triggered by 10-year-old kids chanting for their friends that were playing. Like, are you serious, bro? Come on. It's sad.
It's so bad. Okay. That was another 10-minute answer, Benny. Gonna be here all day.
Well, you had said, because you thought it was, can we stop the ridiculousness? So what's the solution to stopping this ridiculousness? As education,
promotion relegation, bro. All that culture, that suburban soccer parent culture, would end up, they'd still be in the ecosystem, maybe, but at the lowest of tiers. And I know the game that you're referencing is in the toppest of tiers, but I guarantee you that at the top tier, you wouldn't be seeing these things. And you do see these things at the top tier also.
Yeah, that's true.
They'd be filtered out. They'd be filtered out. You're going to lose. If you have that kind of culture, you're going to lose. You're going to disappear from the ecosystem very quickly.
Yeah, for sure. There's actually this mom who does like a soccer mom podcast. And she
I don't know what you're into, bro.
No, but I'm serious. She actually has like, I don't know, 200,000 followers or something. But it's just like a typical soccer mom, like talking about the problems that she sees and all this stuff. I'm going to hit her up, bro. Get her on the podcast with you.
Sure.
All right. Let's move on to a different question, Gary. Thoughts on futsal and potential role in player development or lack thereof?
Yeah, futsal is great. There, I said it. It's great. It's awesome for development. Great. The problem I have with it is that the demographic that you just finished describing, that they don't know any better, Benny, and others, they take that fact that it's great for development and they're like, oh, we should, that's the solution. We should be deploying this stuff all over the place. That solves all the, it doesn't solve dick, okay? Because we still have the overarching systemic problem. So it's awesome. I'll give you another anecdote. You know, there was some commentary from Marcelo, the Brazilian outside back, former Brazilian outside back, Real Madrid, exceptional player. They were interviewing him about outside backs in particular and Brazilian outside backs and if there are any good outside backs left. And I'll just paraphrase what he said. He's like, look, it kind of started with Roberto Carlos and Cafu, right? The left and right outside backs from Brazil from the 90s. Early 2000s. And if you look at their player profile, they were attacking monsters up and down the wing, attack, 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 but also super physical beasts. And they had shots that they can fire cannons on goal. But they weren't really flashy or supremely technical, even though they are, don't get me wrong. And then it kind of evolved to a different type of outside back player profile. There was a little variation in Brazil where it was Dani Alves and himself, Marcelo. And if you look at those two player profiles, they aren't physical beasts that just overpower you and have these cannon shots and all that. They were futsal street soccer talents, essentially. So you would see them doing megging people, or you would see them doing sombreritos over people, or ochos, or scissors, and all that flashiness that we know those two guys to be with. And I'm just tying it together with the question because they got that from futsal, fútbol de salón. And it was, he even said it himself, it's a lot more pleasurable for them to do those fancy little tricks and burn the opponent versus scoring a goal. It even feels better than scoring a goal. So that's kind of the culture that that thing raises. So is it good? Absolutely. Is it the solution in the United States? Absolutely not. It needs to be an ingredient. That's all.
Got it. Straight to the point. I like it, Gary. For me, I honestly think football is, like, I enjoy playing that more than the actual 11 aside. I don't know if I'm alone in that or not, but I've always enjoyed that more. And I felt that I learned like the grittiness of the game and getting stuck in and kind of the, like the whole topic that we talked about, the dark arts of football, right? You learn that not so much in like organized futsal where it's like a league or you're playing in an actual game with refs, but futsal where it's like five aside at a local park on the basketball court. I think that is the most beneficial futsal right there, you know, allowing yeah. yourself to just discover the game, discover the rhythm of the game. You get a lot of touches on the ball, you know, fast paced. I've always enjoyed it more than the game, I guess I could say. I don't know if that makes me sound crazy to some people, but yeah, I don't know. I love futsal personally to play it. And
yeah, it doesn't make you sound crazy. It is more touches, more action. So every player is more involved from that perspective. And so it could be more exciting, more dopamine hits versus the big 11v11 field. It's more chess-like. At the higher levels, it's more chess-like. You're thinking a lot more. The ball is not near you a lot more. So you have to be, this is what differentiates the greats also. They think, it literally is chess, Benny. Everybody is trying to get in the head of everybody else. And why are you standing there? Why are you dropping down, Messi, a little bit? You know, why are you kind of walking? Why are you so far up the field? Like everything is a brain game. But in futsal, it's not really that much of a brain game. It's just action, 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 action. It's schizophrenia all over the place. So if you be also, the other thing I should mention is if you become very good in futsal, that does not mean that you're going to be a good player in the real game. At all. There are exceptional futsal players who suck my biggest pelotas on the big field. And there are world-class players on the big field that if you put them in futsal in a pro league or something, they're shockingly bad. Like it doesn't translate. So everything has its place. Going back to the original question, the futsal stuff does not solve the soccer stuff.
Yeah, 100%. That honestly, Gary, you just described me, bro. I was like, when my teammates looked at me at futsal, I was like fucking bawling. And then when I get on the field, I was fucking shocking. And they're like, bro, what the fuck? Like, why aren't you translating what you do on the futsal court? But you can't. I think the people who get the biggest impact out of it are like wingers. Wingers are for center forwards that can actually work on their, you know, body feints or scissors or. Like, if you put a center back on futsal, it's going to be fucking shocking, bro. I mean, it's good for him to get touches, but I think it has more benefits for, like, that winger type player.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah, even outside backs, too, like you said, like the Dani Alves type. But all right. Enough on futsal. Let's go with this one. What are your thoughts on the new I'm not sure if you've read anything about this, Gary. The new college format, what are the pros and cons of it? Have you seen anything about
it? No clue. Do you know?
Yeah, so basically what they're trying to implement, and I think they are going to implement, is one is going to be a longer season. So instead of just being in the fall, it's going to be like fall and spring. They're trying to like replicate more of the pro game. But what they also want to do is implement a promotion relegation system. And so you get grouped together with like local opponents. And then after your first year of playing, the groups are going to shuffle based on your performance. And also another rule that they want to do is they want to allow people that have formerly played pro to come back and play college. And you can also, if you're a college player, you can now go and like train with the USL team or a pro team. Because in the past, if you go and train with the pro team, you become ineligible. Okay, so now they're going to allow that. So basically three big changes: a longer season, promotion relegation, and this aspect of pro players coming back, or you can now train with pro teams as well.
Cool.
And by the way, U.S. Soccer is recommending this to NCAA. It's not coming from them.
Yeah. Look, I they've been wanting to change the NCAA soccer for a long time. I think I forget the guy's name. It comes out as Sasha, but I don't think it is Sasha. Maybe it is Sasha, like a quote unquote legend college soccer coach from the East Coast. He's been pushing for change for over 10 years in this sort of direction, especially the longer season format. All of these changes, which I've only seen headlines in, Benny, and that's why I didn't want to comment, sound great. It's all good stuff. From a pro player development perspective, I think too little too late, maybe not, but too little too late, because it's precisely because college soccer was what it was back in the day that here in the States, we were also forced into the direction of academies, because they finally realized that soccer doesn't work like NFL or baseball or basketball. You can't go to college first and then get drafted and then you're a good soccer player. No, you're actually a shocking soccer player for all the reasons that we all know I won't dive into. And so if you want to develop pros and actually try to compete with the rest of the world, you had to have your own farm systems and form your own academies. And so the MLS franchises did that. And that basically bypassed the whole college to pro pathway at that point. So will this bring back the college to pro pathway? I mean, it still exists, but come on, let's be realistic. It's basically like if you get drafted out of college soccer, the chances that you're actually going to remain a pro and stay a pro or get picked up or just released, I mean, you're getting released versus how it used to be. I don't know. Good for soccer. Awesome. This is great. It's just not that interesting from my perspective.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, there's another kind of controversy, Gary. A lot of people say that, and I think it's true, that the college system has gone away from recruiting the American players. Like now, don't quote me on this statistic, but majority of college rosters are made up of like 70% international players, you know? So you think is that a good thing for us, or is that not so good?
Again, if we're talking about trying to develop international caliber professionals, who cares? Okay, because you aren't going to get an international caliber professional coming out of college soccer. There might be an exception that pops up at some point, but that's the reality. So I don't care, Benny. I'm a meritocracy type of guy. So if you can, as a college coach, I'm putting myself in their shoes. If you can get yourself a player that is better, but happens to be an overseas kid versus an American kid, I'm getting the overseas kid. Don't care. If I'm a college coach, I'm trying to get the best. And if I deem that you're not the best and you, even though you're American, I'm not going to get the American.
That's true. To me, Gary, the promotion relegation thing in college soccer, it kind of sounds like what the USL doing and how it's not true promotion relegation because it's within their own system, right? But imagine if it was like you're a Division II school and you win the title or something, and then you get fucking moved up to Division I. Obviously, I know it's not possible because the whole school wide is like considered Division One or Division Two, but that would be fucking true promotion relegation, right? You're in Division Two, you win your league, you win the national championship. All right, you fucking get promoted to Division One, and now
So that's not what it is.
No, it's like so. It's let's say you're in Division One, and there's like I don't know the first league of Division One and then second league. And it's all like geographically based as well. And so you'll compete with schools that are in your region. But let's say the first year, like the top division in Division One is Cal State Fullerton, UCI, whatever. And Division Two is UC Riverside or whatever. And then it's just going to move up and down from within their own divisions.
That's lame. That's lame. That's not promotion relegation. That's stupid. That's so dumb. It's so dumb. Okay. I get it now. I care even less, Benny, now.
All right. We'll move on from that one. It seems really that the relevance of college soccer in this country is just tanking year after year.
Yeah, well, I mean, the university system is literally there for academics. I mean, on paper anyway, presumably. So if you're playing college soccer, it's not the primary thing. So how are you going to get, I don't know. And let's move on, Benny. I've always railed against college soccer too. It's just lame. It's academics with a side of soccer. Come on.
Hey, Gary, what if a big Division One school approached you and they're like, hey, Gary, we want you to run this program?
Nope.
We'll give you your own physics department.
No. I'm unemployable.
Got it. All right. Let's see if you want to say anything on this one. Clubs constantly abusing the bio-banding system for short-term wins. Do you know the bio-banding system, Gary?
Maybe you can remind me. The bio-banding is simply they kind of profile the players. Oh, you are physically too mature for the classic U11 age, and so you're going to play U12 or something like that. Or the reverse is true. If you're too... you're a late developer and your age peers are too big, fast and strong for you. We're going to drop you down an age group. Is that basically the gist of it?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly.
So what was the question?
Clubs constantly abusing the bio-banding system for short term.
So how do you abuse that? Is it because it's the club's decision as to whether you play up or play down or something like that?
I think that's what this guy is going for. And I think he's implying that a club would get all the players on, get all the strongest players on one team and then probably enter them into like lower competitions, like a flight three or flight two tournament or something to get a trophy or to get a win.
Got it. Well, I don't know what to say to this, Ben. Again, it goes back to the incentives in the system. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, this is what the system creates, man. Everybody's looking to break the quote unquote rules in order to get wins and not really earn them. That's what we all do. Not me, obviously, but the system. Do you have some comment to say on that? Because it's kind of like what you said about sandbagging at tournaments too. So entering a team at a lower level tournament so that you can just win the trophy.
I mean, it goes to I think the suburban parents have a big role to play in this, because at the end of the day, if their kid is not winning or the team has not won a tournament in like a year, they're going to be the first ones to bounce, bro. You know? And so what do the coaches have to do to keep their parents or their customers happy? You got to win, girl. You got to find a way to bring home a trophy so that, Soccer Mom 25 can post on her Instagram that little Johnny won the Legends Classic Cup, bro.
Totally. No, this is the reality. This is the reality. And it just sucks because the incentives in the system cause us all to fight amongst ourselves, and it distracts us to pointing at the real culprit, the the people who have created the system and uphold the system and preserve the system. They are the responsible ones, not the coach who's doing this or the club who's doing the bio-banding thing or taking advantage of it, or the parent, even the suburban soccer parent who is, you know, wants to win, wants trophies. Otherwise, you know, I'm leaving. I'm taking my kid and my dollars elsewhere, sort of thing. Like, I get both of those sides, but they're both pitted against each other by design. The system pits you against each other. You're not on the same team.
Yeah. I would recommend this guy to go back and watch. I think one of them was the winning at all costs episode. And then another one we did maybe last year was winning over development or something like that. I'll link them in the show notes so that I'll inject it right here. But I would recommend to go back and watch it because we cover this stuff for 2 hours, basically. So there you go. T-Hunt 510. All right, Gary, last one. I think this is a good one to end on. From Flacco, A18. Do you see a good future for American soccer? How will soccer be in 20 to 15 years?
So it depends on what one thinks is a good future. I'm going to give you my definition. A good future is an open ecosystem, which means everybody in the country has freedom, has opportunity, and is embedded in a meritocracy. That is a bright future. Anything that is not that is not a bright future. It's a dark future for me. So for example, if the United States wins 3 World Cups in a row, starting with this summer, but we live under a monopoly, under the tyranny that we currently have, that is not a bright future. That is not a bright future. If there are 130 MLS franchises all across, every state has 4 or 5, you know, MLS franchises. Oh, soccer's blowing up. There's so much money. It becomes the number one sport in the country. It overtakes the NFL, all of this stuff. We have the biggest stars from across the world coming to play here in the United States. But it's a monopoly, and we all live under that sort of tyranny. It is not a bright future for American soccer. So how do I see it? I don't have a crystal ball. It's hard to play out. I think that as the days and weeks and months go by, more and more people are becoming educated to what I just said. So I'm hopeful and optimistic that eventually we'll reach critical mass. The scales will tip. I don't know it precisely the mechanism. Maybe it's very wealthy people come in and tip it, kind of like, remember the live golf thing? You know, golf was upended like a mother effer when Middle Eastern money was injected here and started doing things. So I don't know if it'll be something like that. I don't know if internally themselves will be kind of forced to change. I don't know if there will be a parallel structure that maybe is built with USL or something else, you know, that ultimately ends up in the freedom, opportunity, and a meritocracy. That I can't tell you, but I don't think we'd be doing this podcast. I don't think we'd be running this business, Benny, and continuing to build if I wasn't optimistic. If I thought nothing would ever change, I would just pack my bags and go do something else.
You just give me a great idea, dude. Hit up Middle East money, bro, and start a live soccer league, bro.
Imagine. There you go. There you go.
Bro, imagine what that would do if like that type of money came in and you started your own league with true promotional relegation, allowed for clubs to build and to compete and to move up and down. I mean, the money would be there. The players would come.
Yeah.
That would be insane, bro. What would MLS do, dude?
Well, what monopolies typically do that have a corrupt regulator in their pocket, they would go to the regulator, U.S. Soccer, and try to figure out a way to make rules and make it kind of illegal. So they would work also in conjunction with the government, and lawsuits maybe would fly all over the place to prevent a competitor from entering the space.
It's sick, bro.
It is sick.
That's insane.
And you know what's annoying, Benny? So many of them think that they are the good guys. The guys who work for the monopoly, I mean, they work there for a reason, okay? they share their views. Because if the monopoly realizes that you don't share their views and are part of the power grab, I mean, you're not going to last very long. And also, if you're an exceptional, remarkable human being in the space, you're basically an artist and you won't be able to put up with the bullshit. So everybody who kind of works for the monopoly at these levels, it's wild to me that, I mean, I get it, because everybody gets indoctrinated one way or another in something, right? We all believe in something. How do we come to believe in something? But they all think they're the good guys, which is fucking mind-blowing. Like, you guys are not the good guys here. Hold on, Ben. Yeah. And we're back. Sorry, Benjamin.
No, you're good. This might be a good segue into the whole Don Garber comments that he made. I'm not going to read his whole statement, but somebody asked him, right, do you think MLS should implement promotion relegation? And he basically said, you know, why would they, right? And you came out and said Garber is not the one to hate. He's just doing his job. The real problem lies with the so-called reporters, journalists who are overtly or sneakily propagandists for or help support the monopoly. True trash. And they've thrown the integrity out of the window. Close to them are any media who do the same. Let's get your thoughts on that, Gary.
Yeah, there's a huge distinction between a quote-unquote journalist and, say, a Don Garber or the people who work for the monopoly that I just described. The huge distinction is that a journalist, their job description, in principle, are supposed to be independent observers, right? And speaking truth to power. So that means you got somebody in power there, whether it be the government or some government agency or very powerful people themselves or a corporation, and they fearlessly speak inconvenient truths about that power and sometimes investigate and do things that could topple that power altogether. That is what they're supposed to be doing, at least in principle, and not just in principle. Actually, that is their that is the charter of a journalist. Okay. They violate that every single day. They completely violate it. And they actually help prop up the monopoly. They actually are a propagandist arm of the monopoly. They feed the monopoly. They nurture the monopoly. And you know what's really disgusting, Benny? Is that any would-be competitor to the monopoly or voices who do speak truth to power who are dissenting, those same journalists attack those guys. They attack USL. They attack me. They attack any independent media who is dissenting from the monopoly. It's trash to the maximum, Ben. Versus a Don Garber. Don Garber is an executive that is charged with operating Major League Soccer. So he has bosses. His bosses are the owners of Major League Soccer LLC. And he has a job to do. And that job is to look out for the interest of MLS LLC, full stop. So he is actually fulfilling his job, his charter. He has integrity. He is aligned with his job. Journalists are not aligned with what their job actually is. And yes, people can say, and I understand it completely, probably as good as anybody, that in today's media landscape, journalists are kind of incentivized and forced to not follow their prime directive. They're chartered to be stooges for those in power. They are chartered for create outrageous headlines. They are chartered to do hit pieces on people because that is what gains gains attention and traction and clicks and hence money and revenue for the corporations that they work for. So I understand the incentives are there, but the distinction still resides. You're not a journalist then. You are a propagandist. So that is where we need to direct our attention to. Put those people's feet to the fire. Don Garber's just doing his job. Don Garber is, I mean, if he dies or if he gets in trouble or whatever, okay, the owners just get some other stooge in there to do the exact same thing.
Right. Gary, do you think some of these journalists don't actually know that what they're doing is wrong? Or you said the journalists are not aligned. Do you think some of them truly believe that they are aligned and that they're doing the right thing? Like they're so brainwashed that they think it's good.
We have to go back to a long X post that I made a while back. I'll dig it up for us and post it here. But to paraphrase, I kind of categorize them in three buckets, okay? Bucket number one is, say, the new journalist, the fresh kid out of college or maybe didn't go to college but wants to report on soccer. And this could be anything from an 18-year-old to, gosh, even a 30-year-old, okay? Call a kid at this point. Fresh to the scene, kind of likes soccer or is just dropped into the soccer world. Kid doesn't know any better. He's like the suburban soccer parent that you just described 30 minutes ago. Kid doesn't know dick. Kid doesn't know that MLS teams are not clubs, right? Kid has no clue. All he knows is that the LA Galaxy is the same thing as Besiktas in Turkey, or you know what I mean? Well, he doesn't even know what Besiktas is, okay? But you get it, right? It's the same thing as West Ham or Aston Villa. No clue about the ecosystem. So that is one bucket, and they think that they're doing their job and correctly. Benny, they don't even know what strings to pull. They don't even know that there's like a battle or a war really going on. And what's worse is that those kids come naturally under the mentorship and the tutelage of the experienced guys who are working for the monopoly, let's say. So imagine they're surrounded by those dudes who are brainwashing on a daily basis in the MLS narrative over and over and over and over again. So the kid almost never has a chance. You are 100% indoctrinated. So even after 5, 10, 15 years of experience, you truly believe that you're not doing anything wrong. So that's one bucket, Benny. The other bucket is the guys who actually work for the monopoly. So if you go to MLSsoccer.com, for example, they have quote unquote reporters or journalists writing articles there, producing video content. Come on, dude, you're not a reporter or journalist. You literally work for the monopoly. You can't be a journalist or reporter. You literally work for them. So there's that group. And then there's the other bucket who you don't work for them, but you're old, seasoned, you know, you've been in the industry 20, 25, 30 years. There's two classifications, A and B there. A is you actually believe that this is what's good for soccer. Okay. And so you don't go after the monopoly. And you also have in the back of your head that if you go after the monopoly, you're drawing unwanted attention. I'm putting it lightly to yourself, saying you want to keep your job and you're under that sort of threat if you ever consider going against the monopoly. And then there's the other subgroup, which is the truest of all trash. They actually know that it's not good for soccer. It's not good for the ecosystem. It's not good for the communities. It's not good for anybody outside of the monopoly. This system is not good. And they don't care. They don't care. They even might take joy in going after people who are opposed to the monopoly. That is the truest of the truest trash in the ecosystem. And so there's all these different buckets that I have them filtered in.
Yeah. No, great. This is why it's a great thing that Elon Musk bought X, right? It wasn't he the one that came out and said, like, we are now the media?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's massive shift in where people are getting their coverage from. And also, anybody has the right now to come out and be truly freedom of speech, right? Say whatever you want against the machine, basically, you know, so... Yeah, man.
Yeah, agreed. By the way, that's why it was that moment that the entire media complex, the national scale, turned against him and started calling him evil and all that stuff. It was that was the inflection point, because all these Muppet journalists who aren't real journalists, they are propagandists, they are bond paid for, they are peddlers, they are to the establishment. They have been enjoying a monopoly on the minds of human beings, because they were the ones who everybody had to listen to, be it New York Times, Washington Post, whatever. They were the only ones with blue check marks. They were distinguished. They were the credible ones. You must listen to me and nobody else. I get to wire your brain the way I see fit. It's literally what we're doing, right? When you produce sound waves, those sound waves vibrate your eardrum, send very specific signals to your brain, your neurons fire in a very specific way, and that restructures your mind and your brain. So if you get the same message over and over and over and over again, it's the same structure that gets more and more and more calcified in your mind. It is literal brainwashing. And they were the privileged ones. They sat in that seat. And so Elon buys and says, nah, your blue check marks mean dick, okay? Anybody can say whatever they want. Anybody can be amplified as much as, if their content is good, it gets amplified. It doesn't get downgraded or anything. That's why they hated him. It's the same battle in soccer. It's the same exact sentiment, same exact thing. We talked about it last episodes. So Filippo, tactical manager, built for himself a sizable audience. Good for him. He deserves it. And the establishment media ignore it or even trash him behind the scenes. Why? Because they want to be the only ones with the microphone, the only ones with a voice.
1984, bro.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We're living it. We're living
it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
All right, Gary, I missed one of the things, but you can answer it really quick. Somebody said, how can I get you guys on a podcast? Because
what does that mean?
Well, like a lot of people want you to be a guest on their podcast, Gary.
Oh, that's fine. I'll go on a podcast if they want. I mean, I think it also depends on
what are your consideration? Like when somebody reaches out to you, you know, do you do a little like research on what is it that they stand for? Or what do you look for when somebody wants you to be a guest on their show?
I think the biggest filter, I mean, I don't give it all that much thought because I don't care that much, Benny. I mean, I'll go and be a guest anywhere. It's not an issue. The biggest filter though is, are you one of these media Muppets, these establishment journalists or reporters, or even not a journalist reporter, but a pundit, you know, that is pro monopoly, pro. I know what they do. And no, I'm not going to get on. You can go fuck yourself. I'm not going to do that. Because they are bad faith actors. I'm not going to go and give my time, which is extremely valuable, to a bad faith actor who then, on top of it all, will go back and edit the episode in a certain way to paint a certain narrative. Go fuck yourself. I'm not playing your game. I go straight to the consumer. I go straight to the listener. I go straight to the audience. Your platform that you have, whatever, can go fuck itself. And I think most entrepreneurs, most athletes too, they're wisening up to this also. They've known it, but they're becoming even more wise. And that's my advice to them. Ignore all those people. Go straight to the audience. Fuck the platforms.
I like it.
Why do you want somebody to filter what you say or set you up and, you know, have alternative agendas? Fuck you. Talk to the audience directly.
Love it, dude. Love it. I think in 2026, Gary, we need, a lot of people keep asking for it, the live Q&A, bro.
Okay. No problem. Maybe we can do that. That'll be the first one of 2026. I'm down for it.
I like it. Gary, what's next for 343 in 2026? And if you can, maybe reflect on this past year, the good, the bad.
Hang on. Gosh, so many things. So top of mind, 2025, I think we were a little bit more consistent with our publishing, you know, trying to do maybe one podcast a week. We also, I think it's when we instantiated the YouTube channel. We got back to the YouTube channel, right? Publishing there once a week, in addition to the audio version. Obviously, you've done good work in publishing three times a week on Instagram, these short reels, even though obviously people are very toxic there and they misinterpret things because it is a short reel. It's literally 30 seconds to a minute or whatever, and you don't get the full context, which is fine. This is the name of the game. This is how it works. But I think it's been a positive development. Gosh, man, I think, you know, in particular 2026, we talked about this. I think we really need to divert a lot of attention to a refocus again, laser focus on the education side from the premium members, right? So the masterclass first and foremost above everything, the parent education I think is absolutely critical to everything. So it needs to be masterclass focus. And, you know, not to say that the coaches don't need attention. They absolutely do need attention. So maybe when we do the live Q&As, that could be super helpful to them. So I don't know. That's in top of mind. I really want the masterclass to do a lot better. And merch, Benny, merch. You just sent your first shipment of merch for the holiday season. I think it'll be there before the year is out. Beautiful packages, top quality shirts, like I've told you in the audience before. We've done our homework over years of testing out different materials, testing out different prints, test. So I think people will be really satisfied with that. So yeah, if people want merch, they can reach out. But for the time being, it's only accessible to members. So I don't know, another incentive for coaches out there. You won't regret it becoming a member of the coaching program. You know, I'm publishing Alec Lemon's podcast today, even though it is Christmas Eve. It doesn't matter. I'm putting it out there into the world. Founder of a club in Kansas City, director president there, has built something from scratch over the course of, say, 10 years. And you'll hear in that episode, you know, him saying, talking about his early days and how he came across 343 and then how he joined the coaching program and what that has done for him, his coaching staff, and the club as a whole. So another little side piece, Ben, but I think we need to start shipping merch to coaching members too.
Love it. I want to throw it out there, Greg, because you know, it's Christmas Eve. I'm feeling jolly. The first person to comment Gary is a legend, I will send out a box. One person. Dang. One person. There he is, alert.
You know what's cool too? Oh, on this episode, got it. You know what we can do too is we can go on YouTube and put the comments, make sure the comments are like on hold so that nobody gets to see if somebody's already done it yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then off we go.
There's always.
I think I'll probably get, I'm probably only going to get like 3 comments.
Well, when something's free is on the line. Fucking people.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe I should make it whoever writes the nicest comment about Gary gets a shoe.
Jesus Christ.
Christ. Gary is a legend. That's all you need to write. Gary is a legend. The first person to do
so
it.
So bad. And it's bad signal. It's bad signal because it's incentivized signal, dude. Now people are going to lie. People who hate me are going to write it.
Fine.
Okay. Well, anything else, Ben?
No, Gary, really quick, because I know we have a lot of new listeners, and I know you said, you know, we really want to build up this masterclass. Can you give us a 2-minute spiel, Gary, of why do parents absolutely need this? I personally see this masterclass as way more beneficial than any personal trainer could offer you, right? I think it gives you the power to become your son or daughter's own personal trainer, basically, and give them the tools that they need to thrive in this game and be successful in this game. So why do parents absolutely need this, Gary? And just a minute long of what it actually is.
So it's an online membership site where we have developed modules and lessons within those modules based on our 25 years of experience of working in this ecosystem at every single level. We've coached from U9 to U19 and professionals now with Brian entering the professional realm. I've run an agency that represents professional players for the better part of a decade. So we understand the entire cradle to grave pipeline. And so our combined experiences are involved in the development of this parent education, quote unquote, masterclass. So what's in there? We're trying to consolidate all of that wisdom and transfer it to the parents so that they can do a variety of things for their kids. First and foremost, the overarching thought is be a better mentor and guide for your kid through their youth soccer trajectory. And that involves a few things. Number one is individual player development. So technical training that they can do on their own. So there's a whole bunch of exercises there in the lessons that you can show your kid, and they can go out into the, wherever it is, a racquetball court in their backyard, in a empty patch of grass in a park or something, and execute on those exercises. And the exercises range from like beginner to super advanced. So that's number one. Because a lot of parents don't know, right, what to tell their kids to go work on. I mean, they know in concept, but they don't actually know or understand what is important. So that's number one. And you get to see the real players executing it, so you understand what it's supposed to look like versus, oh, just kick the ball against. No, what does it actually look like, and why is this exercise critical, and how is it actually tied to the real game? That's number one. Number two is knowing to identify what is a good coach from the team perspective. So there's a whole education that goes into that. What to look for in training. What are red flags? So when you choose your kid's team or your kid's coach, you are well-versed in these things and you know what to look for. And then number three is the cultural component. So let's say you're with your kid and you're watching games together, or you're on the drive home from a match, you know, and that your kid just played in. What are all those moments, right, that are off the field, and you have conversations with your kid about the game? You have a cultural backing now, or we're trying to give you a cultural backing of what is good soccer culture, what are good things to say, and what are not good things to say. I'm not talking about, oh, being supportive or not being supportive, or scolding your kid or not scolding your kid. I'm not talking about that at all. It's all about developing your eye for what is a good culture that enables a player to develop. Like, we talked about the suburban soccer culture today. And so bad culture would be exhibiting to your kid that you're out there as a parent complaining to 10-year-olds, oh, they're not supposed to be chanting on the sidelines. Like, that is the worst possible culture that you could be transmitting to your kid. So I don't know, Benny, it's kind of hard in audio form to really divulge it, but I think that that's basically the gist of it. You got individual technical training, you got developing your eye for proper team training, and you got the development of your culture.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful, Gary. 2026, man, it's going to be a big year for 343. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. We got to double our workload.
Yes, sir. I think even the World Cup coming here, Gary, I think it's a huge opportunity for just more education of the fan base and getting that mass to have the understanding, Gary. And hopefully we do. It's one piece at a time, right?
I wish I had more time, Benny, but something that would be very helpful is creating or translating the thoughts, ideas, press conferences of the masters, like I did one recently regarding Marcelo Bielsa. Marcelo Bielsa gave a 3-hour post-match sermon after he lost to the United States. And there's gold nugget after gold nugget after gold nugget after gold nugget. And I just took a 1-minute moment and transcribed that for the audience. And people can, we'll link it here again. I don't know if I should publish it within the episode. But I want to do more of that, because tying it to your point that the World Cup is coming here and a lot of learning opportunities, I think that's true. I think there's also a hazard here for the English-only speaking audience when they tune into the World Cup games and they're listening to the MLS Muppets commenting on the game or broadcasting the game. They're getting a terrible soccer education by listening to that. So it's cool the World Cup is coming, but there's going to be more, and it's also an opportunity for terrible education to go out to the American soccer masses.
I even asked you one time, Gary, like, is the Mexican broadcast better? Because I always just assumed that it was, but you even said, like, even some of those guys are clueless too. They just sound terrible. Better. You sound better.
Yeah.
More excited.
Terrible. The Mexicans are terrible too. So bad. It is better. Don't get me wrong. It's better, but holy smokes, like, so many of them are also bought and paid for. But at least there's more heart and feeling, yeah, authentically coming from that side. So even if what's coming out of their mouth isn't the greatest, the culture is far superior in the culture here, because here it's faked.
Yeah. How were the, there's two commentators, Gary, that like during the prime Barcelona era, there was two commentators that were always on the games, English speaking. Like one of them was like the freaking, the metaphor, like, oh, fucking Messi's like a gazelle in the fields, you know? There was him and then like another guy, but like, bro, that was like my childhood, bro, listening to those guys. And those guys are fucking badass, dude. Do you know who I'm talking
those
about?
Those guys?
You know?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I do. I just forget their names don't come to mind at the moment. Those were the exception to the rule. I agree. Did they have incredibly deep, rich soccer expertise? I think the gentleman who was always doing the metaphors, right? Yeah. Oh, Messi, the little magician, you know, pull the teeth out of a saber-toothed tiger's ass or something like that, whatever it was. He knew his football for sure. For sure. He, you know, my English rants, but he knew football. His sidekick, I remember his name now, Phil Shane, was a good sidekick to him. And yeah, man, I think it's because they were detached from the monopoly and they were working for BN Sports and they were basically just focused in on La Liga and Barcelona, Real Madrid games precisely. So their jobs weren't really on the line. And they weren't, those broadcasts in particular, they weren't told, it wasn't part of their job to advertise for Major League Soccer. Oh, and don't miss on Saturday evening, the LA Galaxy is playing against Houston. None of that shit existed, right? So those guys were good. I think they're done though now. I think they're either retired or gone. What's his name? Ray, did you look it up?
Yeah, Ray Hudson, bro. Legend, bro.
Ray Hudson. Ray Hudson, yeah, legend.
One of his quotes are, if Isaac Newton was watching this man, he'd be saying, boy, I was wrong regarding Messi defying gravity. Bro, this guy must have, like, before the game, just come up with, like, 100 fucking metaphors to use. And he knows any situation that happens, this was locked and loaded to go. That guy is a legend, bro.
An example of a true craftsman. He took the craft to heart and he become obsessed with it, loves it, and you just live and breathe it. That guy lived and breathed it, man.
He did.
Huge difference.
I'm gonna, if we don't get copyrighted, I want to end the episode with some of his commentary, bro. That guy's a fucking genius.
I think it's safe to publish that.
Yeah. All right, dude. Good stuff, my man. Stuff.
Thank you, Benny. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.